Hi, I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! For more than 15 years, CJSF 90.1 FM has been bringing Democracy Now! To the greater Vancouver area every weekday at 11 a.m. From New York, this is Democracy Now!
Our message to the freedom people in the world, ready to stop the genocide in Gaza Strip and especially in the north in Gaza. You can't imagine how the situation here. The people are dying in the street. They are injured in the street and nobody can move to bring them.
Israeli soldiers have launched a full-scale attack on northern Gaza, reportedly blowing up at least a dozen residential buildings and storming Khamel Adwan Hospital, forcing out patients and staff. We'll get an update from the acting director of Al-Auda Hospital in the Jabalia refugee camp. And we'll be joined by the Palestinian poet and author, Mossab Abu Toha. He's just published his new book of poetry, Forest of Noise.
It is really devastating to think that after a year, the world is still thinking about the October 7th only, rather than about the years and decades before October 7th and the many and long, long days and weeks that followed October 7th.
And the BRICS summit has just wrapped up in Russia, where President Vladimir Putin made a comeback to the global stage, hosting 36 world leaders and representatives from countries including China, India, South Africa, Iran, Venezuela, and even Palestine. Many heads of states demanded a Gaza ceasefire. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. In northern Gaza, Israeli soldiers have launched a full-scale attack on Jabalia. Details are still emerging on what a Gaza civil defense spokesperson described as a major massacre, with more than 150 people killed or injured as Israeli forces took down a dozen residential buildings. Late Thursday, Israeli forces stormed Khamel Adwan Hospital, expelling patients and staff after earlier surrounding and shelling what was essentially the last hospital left standing in the area. Soldiers carried out mass arrests. Doctors say babies and children have died after being cut off from their oxygen supplies. Khamel Adwan's director, Dr. Hussam Abu Safia, says the situation is catastrophic, that there is nowhere patients in northern Gaza can go for treatment. After headlines, we'll go to northern Gaza to speak with the acting director of Khamel Adwan, Mohammed Salha. Israeli attacks in the southern Gaza Strip continue as well. In Khan Yunis, at least 38 people were killed by Israel, including 14 children from the same family. U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken says he expects Gaza ceasefire talks to resume in the coming days in Doha. In Lebanon, an Israeli strike killed three journalists as they slept in a guest house in the southern town of Hasbaya. Israel did not issue any evacuation orders for the area before the strike. The victims were Almayadeen journalist Qasem Najjar and Mohammed Reda and Wissam Qasim of Amanar TV. Almayadeen reporter Abbas Sabah addressed his colleagues' killing earlier today from Lebanon.
Israel targeted journalists in Hasbaya, knowing that the area is known for the gathering of journalists. This enemy that looks for civilian targets after it's drained its military targets and lost in the field is now targeting journalists.
Lebanon's information minister called the attack a war crime. The official death toll from Israel's assault on Lebanon is nearing 2,600. In Russia, 36 world leaders have wrapped up a summit of the BRICS alliance led by Brazil, Russia, India, China, and South Africa, with a pledge to add 13 new partners. The newly expanded BRICS will include Algeria, Belarus, Bolivia, Cuba, Indonesia, Kazakhstan, Malaysia, Nigeria, Thailand, Turkey, Uganda, Uzbekistan, and Vietnam. Venezuela failed in its bid to join BRICS after Brazil vetoed its admission. The Brazilian president, Luiz Inácio Lula, Lula da Silva has said he would not accept the result of July's election in which Venezuelan President Nicolas Maduro claimed to narrowly win re-election. We'll have more on the BRICS summit later in the broadcast. In the Philippines, Tropical Storm Trami has killed at least 26 people after dumping torrential rains across the main island of Luzon. At least 14 of the deaths were in Batangas province.
I was panicking. I was looking for my child. He was missing. When I got here, all the houses were gone. Everything was buried in mud. There was also two residents looking for their family under the mud.
The United Nations Environment Program warns without dramatic cuts to greenhouse gas emissions, the world will face an inevitable and catastrophic temperature rise of 3.1 degrees Celsius by the end of the century. UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres issued a stark warning as he announced the findings.
The message of today's emissions gap report is clear. We are teetering on a planetary tightrope. Either leaders bridge the emissions gap, or we plunge headlong into climate disaster, with the poorest and most vulnerable suffering the most.
King Charles has joined leaders of 56 nations, most of them former British colonies, for the Commonwealth Heads of Government meeting, which opened today in Samoa's capital, Apia. Two dozen of the Commonwealth's nations are small island states, making the threat of rising seas and worsening tropical storms a priority at this year's summit. A new report finds the Commonwealth's three wealthiest members, Australia, Canada, and the United Kingdom, are responsible for 60% of its greenhouse gas emissions, even though they comprise just 6% of the Commonwealth's population. Ahead of the talks, Tuvalu's prime minister called on nations to back a fossil fuel non-proliferation treaty.
To put it plainly, it is a death sentence, phrases that I use lightly. For us, Tuvalu, if larger nations continue to increase their emission levels, a fossil fuel treaty will be a global mechanism essential for managing a just transition away from coal, oil, and gas.
Meanwhile, King Charles has refused calls by African and Caribbean nations to pay reparations and make amends for Britain's role in the transatlantic slave trade. In remarks opening the Commonwealth summit, Charles stopped short of an apology. He instead acknowledged painful aspects of Britain's past. In Mozambique, protests broke out after Daniel Chapo of the ruling Frelimo party was announced the winner of a disputed presidential election Thursday.
I don't believe that Frelimo won. I think Frelimo did what they always do. What's happening today is people are suffering.
Chapo's biggest rival, Venancio Mondlane, has called on supporters to keep taking to the streets in protest. Earlier this week, police deployed tear gas and fired on demonstrators who rallied after the murder of Mondlane's lawyer and a party official. Issues in this year's election included Mozambique's debt crisis, corruption, climate change-driven disasters, and a violent insurgency in the north of the country. Here in New York, a group of protesters gathered outside the Dominican consulate in the Bronx Thursday to denounce the mass deportation of Haitians by the Dominican Republic. Earlier this month, the Dominican president, Luis Abinader, announced a campaign to expel up to 10,000 Haitians a week, citing an excess of immigrants. In the last 3 weeks, over 27,000 people have been deported to Haiti. This is Dr. Saudi Garcia. The expulsions come as the UN says more than 10,000 Haitians were internally displaced over the past week after fleeing gang attacks around the capital, Port-au-Prince. In campaign news, Donald Trump rallied in Tempe, Arizona Thursday, where he unleashed another torrent of anti-immigrant hate speech.
Kamala's migrant invasion, given to us through gross incompetence, disqualifies her from even thinking about being president. And we're a dumping ground. We're like a We're like a garbage can for the world. That's what's happened.
Trump deployed a similar hate-filled rhetoric at another Thursday rally in Las Vegas, where he also claimed he was leading by a lot in swing states, even as most polls put him neck and neck with Kamala Harris. Meanwhile, in Clarkston, Georgia, Kamala Harris shared the stage with Barack Obama for the first time during her campaign, as she touted her support for abortion rights, her proposals to lift up the middle class. The star-studded rally included Spike Lee, Samuel L. Jackson, and Tyler Perry in a performance from Bruce Springsteen. As of Wednesday, nearly 2 million Georgian voters cast early ballots, a record for Georgia. The immigrant justice group Al Otro Lado celebrated a major legal victory this week after a federal appeals court ruled in favor of its class action lawsuit against the Department of Homeland Security. The case challenged the illegal practice by Customs and Border Protection of turning away asylum seekers at U.S. ports of entry without due process, forcing them to wait in border cities, often in extremely dangerous and precarious situations. And President Biden is visiting the Gila Crossing Community School in Arizona today, where he'll issue a formal apology for government-run Native American boarding schools, which separated indigenous families and sought to eliminate Native cultures. The U.S. government operated hundreds of these schools from 1819 to 1969. Where children reported severe physical and psychological abuse. An Interior Department investigation this year found nearly 1,000 children died while at the schools. Biden will be accompanied by Interior Secretary Deb Haaland, the first ever Native American cabinet secretary. Haaland is a member of the Pueblo of Laguna. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. We begin today's show in northern Gaza, where Israeli soldiers launched a full-scale attack on Jabalia earlier today, blowing up a dozen residential buildings. Gaza officials described the attack as a major massacre and warned of mass casualties, with more than 150 people reportedly killed or injured. Late Thursday, Israeli forces stormed Kamal Adwan Hospital, expelling patients and staff after earlier surrounding and shelling what was essentially the last hospital left standing in the area. Soldiers carried out mass arrests. Doctors say babies and children have died after being cut off from their oxygen supplies. Kamal Adwan's director, Dr. Hussam Abu Safia, says the situation is catastrophic and there's nowhere patients in northern Gaza can go for treatment. This comes as displaced mothers in northern Gaza are calling on the world to demand the resumption of the polio vaccination campaign for children there, which the World Health Organization said Wednesday had been postponed due to Israeli attacks and lack of access.
If the polio vaccination is not available in the northern part of the Gaza Strip, the children will be paralyzed. They will collapse in front of our eyes. They won't move. Is this fair? We demand the world to allow the entry of the polio vaccination into the northern part of the Gaza Strip to protect our children from the polio virus.
For more, Democracy Now! Reached Dr. Mohammed Salha, acting director of Al-Ada Hospital in the Jabalia refugee camp in North Gaza late Thursday night. He described what's happening on the ground.
Today is the 20 days of siege in the North Gaza, and the fifth day of siege in Al-Ada Hospital, totally siege in Al-Ada Hospital with a tank, so we can't move outside the hospital. And from the beginning of this stage, they are bombing our two inpatient departments and bombing our water tank. So now we have more than 70% of the hospital without water because the tank is destroyed, totally destroyed, the water tank. And also this afternoon, they are bombing our central store related to medical supplies. After today, we will not have the fuel to run in the hospital, and we have a lot of patients inside the hospital. We have 43 of patients here, and we can't deal with this because every day we are doing to them operations and the treatment in the under GA inside our OT, and we need medication, medical supplies, and the fuel, and also food. We don't have food, and we don't have healthy water and filtered water. Our message to the freedom people in the world really to stop the genocide in Gaza Strip and especially in the north in Gaza. You can't imagine how is the situation here. The people are dying in the streets. They are injured in the streets and nobody can move to bring them. Now there is a massacre for more than 150. When you speak with me in Jabalia camp, but there is nobody can go there to serve these people. Really, we need also from WHO, UN agencies, and our partner really to urgent appeal and urgent to come to the hospital to bring our needs from medication and medical supplies, and especially from fuel, food, and healthy water for patients here.
That was Dr. Mohammed Salha, acting director of Al-Adha Hospital, speaking late Thursday night to Democracy Now! We attempted to reach him live right now, but we could not get any kind of connection. When we come back, we'll be joined by Palestinian poet and author Mosab Abu Toha. He's just published his new book of poetry, Forest of Noise.
إن سقطت على التراب مسربلا بكيا جراحي وتدفقت منك الدماء وما لا في جنبي سلاحي أنا إن سقطت على التراب مسربلا بكيا جراحي وتدفقت منك الدماء وما لا في جنبي سلاحي وتخطفت جسد الطيور الحائمات على البطاح هذا طريقي في الكفاح فيا أخي سقطت على التراب مسربلا بك يا جراحي وتلفقت منك الدماء وما لا في جنبي سلاحي أنا إن سقطت على التراب مسربلا بك يا جراحي وتلفقت منك الدماء وما لا في جنبي سلاحي وتخطفت جسد الطيور الحائمات على البطاح هذا طريقي في الكفاح فيا أخي
If I should fall From the 1974 album Palestine Lives, released by Paradon Records, musician and label co-founder Barbara Dane passed away this week at the age of 97. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. As human rights activists plead with global leaders for immediate action, calling for an end to Israel's genocide in Gaza, Jordan's foreign minister met with U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken in London today and condemned the humanitarian catastrophe in northern Gaza, telling Blinken, quote, "We do see ethnic cleansing taking place, and that has got to stop," he said. For more, we're joined by Palestinian poet and author from Gaza, who writes in his new book of poems, If You Live in Gaza, You Die Several Times. Mosab Abu Toha's second book of poetry is just out. It's titled Forest of Noise. His previous award-winning book of poetry, Things You May Find Hidden in My Ear, Poems from Gaza. Mosab Abu Toha is a columnist, a teacher, founder of the Edward Said Library in Gaza. His recent essay in the New York Times is headlined, Gaza's Schools Are for Learning, Not for Dying. And his latest piece for The New Yorker is headlined, The Gaza We Leave Behind. Mosab Abu Toha, it's wonderful to have you in studio safely here in New York, but I know that your heart and mind are in Gaza right now. Before we talk about your poetry, you have just come with terrible news for you and your family about what is happening there. Can you describe what you've heard just today?
Thank you so much, Amy. just you mentioned the airstrikes that took down 10 residential buildings. I was staying with that in that place with my wife and kids just before we had to leave for an UNRWA school to stay in a shelter there and before I was abducted by the Israeli army. And this morning I looked at the names of some of the people who were killed in that airstrike. And I see that, 19 names from the same family, including Mfathi Abu Rashid. I mean, a temporary neighbor. I mean, we had Mfathi as a neighbor for a few days before we had to leave the neighborhood. And now I read that this neighborhood, where I was staying with them, was bombed. So she was killed along with some of her children. And this is the case of so many people. I'm not sure if you can see this. This is the list of the whole family. And for example,
you're holding up a list of what, some 20 names?
Yeah, 20 names, including Mfathi, the grandmother, her children, and her grandchildren. And I look at, for example, I read this every day. So there is Muhammad Salman, his brother Yusuf, Islam, Sama'aya. So five brothers. And then there is Mahmoud Fathi, the son of Mfathi, Abu Rashid, and his wife and their children. So I've been seeing all this all the time. And by the way, we are focusing right now on North Gaza. Yesterday, late at night, Israel bombed intensely Khan Yunis. And I'm looking at some of the pictures here. These are the photos of the children who were killed yesterday. They just were able to withdraw the bodies of these children after the Israelis retreated from the area. So, that was today. I learned about this just half an hour ago. And then I went to the local news channel in my city, Beit Lahia, North Gaza, and I saw the picture of my neighbor, Ayman Abu Layla. This is his photo. He was killed this morning while he was trying to get some water from a tap in the street. Ayman, to honor his memory, he was the principal of the only agricultural college in North Gaza. And he was trying, by the way, he lived just a few blocks away, and he wanted to move to stay with his brother because there are some friends and some neighbors who are staying there. So he wanted to be close to the people who are there. But he was killed, and his son, my wife just told me, because she was on the phone with her mother and father, who are trapped right now in Beit Lahia, they were told that the brother of my neighbor has been critically wounded, and he is in the house. There is no way that an ambulance can come. There is no way that anyone can come to their rescue. And the same thing happened yesterday in the Jebel refugee camp, the 10 residential buildings that were took down.
Musab, yesterday, last night, I saw you at the Brooklyn Public Library, sold out to hear you speak about your poetry. And you said at the beginning, I saw your wife and your three little children, but that hadn't been the plan. Now in Syracuse, at Syracuse University. Yeah. Talk about you almost canceling the day before because your wife was too terrified for you to come to New York.
Indeed, I mean, taking my wife and three kids with me was a last-minute decision. I mean, the Israeli army has been, horribly attacking North Gaza, displacing people, and kidnapping, abducting doctors and nurses and journalists, and even the injured people. They had to evacuate. I mean, just imagine, I mean, people who have been injured and they had some medical care and they had to be on some medical equipment. They are taken away from the hospital. Some of them would die. And that's why the Lancet Journal said that more than 200,000 people have died or were killed by the Israeli airstrike, the Israeli military campaign since October 7th. So my wife's family, including her father, her mother, her siblings, and some of the nephews and nieces, her grandparents too, aged 75, they are now trapped in the family house, and they are unable to leave. And now the Ata Abu Layla, my neighbor, was killed just a few meters away from them by a piece of shrapnel from a tank shell. So she worries that if I'm away from her, and she gets some terrible news, like today's news, she would die from pain and grief. So she wanted me to be with her, and so I told her I couldn't cancel, you know, the event at the Brooklyn Public Library, and also my event today at NYU. So I said, okay, you come with me, and now she came with me, as if this would, I mean, I don't say that I would make her feelings better, because I too have family in Beit Lahia. I have a young sister with three children. The youngest is 2 years old. And I haven't talked to her for about 10 days. It's impossible to get in touch with my sister. I don't know how she's surviving or whether she's alive at this moment.
You wrote on social media 6 days ago, "I write with a heavy heart that my cousin Sama, 7 years old, has been killed in the airstrike on their house, along with 18 members of her family, which is my extended family." Yeah. For our TV audience, we are showing an image of Sama right now. Yeah. Tell us who she is.
So Asma is one of the five children of my aunt Asma, who was also injured. The mother, I mean, in the house, Asma was staying with her parents, with her siblings, with her grandmother, who happens to be my grandmother's sister. And I used to call her grandmother because my grandmother passed away when I was very young. So my grandmother's sister, with two of her daughters and her grandchildren, and two of her daughter-in-laws and the grandchildren, are still buried under the rubble until this moment. So Asma was killed in the airstrike. And the only reason why my aunt and her other children, or even though they were wounded, the only reason why they were not killed is that they were staying close to the door. Because the bomb, when it falls, it usually hits the middle of the house. So my aunt Asma survived the airstrike with some injuries, along with her husband and other four children. And they had, by the way, they were my aunt had to walk to the Israeli soldiers who were standing just a few meters away from the bombed house. So just imagine a criminal killing you and then waiting for you until you are either dead or come to them limping. And she told me that she kissed their hands, begging them to leave them alone. And if she could take with her some wheat flour from the house that she was keeping next to her, because there is no food in Gaza. So Asma was 7 years old. And I remember something very clearly, which is that every time I visited my aunt's house, especially during the Eid, the you know, after the Ramadan and after, you know, the pilgrimage season. So we have two big Eids or feasts. So I used to visit my aunt, and her children are there. And this photo is from, I think you showed it. But this is from the Eid. This is her dress. And my aunt would bring a sheet of paper and ask her daughters, including Asma, yalla, because I'm an English language teacher. So she said, yalla, show Mus'ab. Show Mus'ab the new words that you have learned, the colors, the animals. But now, Asma, I mean, I did not have the chance to bid her farewell. This is my cousin. And I lost 31 members of my extended family, including three first cousins, two of them with their husband and children. I didn't get just the chance even to see them before they were buried. And I didn't know whether some of them had any part of their bodies intact after the airstrikes. So just imagine the magnitude of loss that I'm facing as I'm just one person. Some other people lost all their families. And we know about the new term, wounded child, no surviving family. About more than 2,000 children had the same case. They were the sole survivors of their family. I mean, what future is awaiting them? No one is asking this question.
Mus'ab Abu Toha is an award-winning poet and author. He has a new book of poetry out. It's called Forest of Noise. Your descriptions now make me think of your little son. You came with your three children yesterday. Can you read the poem about your son and your daughter?
Yeah, sure. So, by the way, this poem was written after May 2021 attacks. So my son Yazan was about 5 years old. My daughter Yafa was 4 years old. And this is about them.
Now, this is very important because you just said this is written in May 2021.
Yes.
Half your poems in Forest of Noise are before last October
exactly.
7th.
Yeah.
And the other half after.
Well, I mean, this tells you and others a lot of things. So this poem could be written today. And if it was written today, there are so many things that would not be present here, because this current genocide is so different from any other wars that Israel launched against the civilian population in the Gaza Strip. My son throws a blanket over my daughter. Gaza, May 2021. At night, at home, we sit on the floor, close to each other, far from the windows and the red lights of bombs. Our backs bang on the walls whenever the house shakes. We stare at each other's faces, scared yet happy that so far our lives have been spared. The walls wake up from their fitful sleep, no arms to wipe at their bleary eyes. Flies gather around the only lit ceiling lamp for warmth in the bitter night, cold except when missiles hit and burn up houses and roads and the trees. The neighborhood next to us, where Yazan learned to ride his bike, scorched. Every time we hear a bomb falling from an F-16 or an F-35, our lives panic. our lives freeze somewhere in between, confused where to head next. A graveyard, a hospital, a nightmare. I keep my shivering hand on my wristwatch, ready to remove the battery if needed. My four-year-old daughter Yaffa, wearing a pink dress given to her by a friend, hears a bomb explode. She gasps, covers her mouth with her dress's ruffles. Yazan, her 5.5-year-old brother, grabs a blanket worn by his sleepy buddy. He lays the blanket on his sister. "You can hide now," he assures her. And I have a video of